You're listening to The Cowboy Pages. Come with me, Christy Crowley, as I travel America in search of cowboy poets and their wisdom. Today's book, Santa Clarita, California, Chapter 6, Songster, My Conversation with Musician Don Edwards.
As I was walking one morning for pleasure, I spied a cowpuncher come a-loping along. His hat was throwed back and his spurs was a-jingling. As he approached, he was singing this song. E-I-O, little lad, Eli Easy, who's your real daddy may never be known. Weeping and wailing and rocking the cradle, minding a baby that's none of my own. Well, it's early in spring that we round up the dogies. We mark 'em, we brand 'em, we bob off their tails. Round up the horses, load up the chuck wagon, throw them little dogies out on that long trail. Whoopie-tie-i-o, get along, little dogies. Your misfortune and none of my own. Whoopie-tie-i-o, get along, you little dogies, for you know that Wyoming will be your new home.
After hitching a ride to find cowboy work out west, he was sidetracked by a newspaper ad seeking gunslingers, dancing girls, and musicians to entertain the crowds at the original Six Flags Over Texas Adventure Park. And there, a true performer was born. Having seen Mr. Edwards on stage, his voice is unmistakable, truly unique, and always captivating. He seems to hold the magic of the West and the strength of the cowboy code in each note. People speak of Mr. Edwards with great respect and care. He is, in fact, a living legend. But I wanted to know how this artist makes his work, and
what kind of language do you put around the music that you make? It's not country, it's...
I still just call it cowboy music, Western music.
And what for you is the distinction? For someone who doesn't know, let's say I haven't heard either.
Cowboy music is the folk music of the working cowboy. That is what it is. It's been passed down through the 19th century. And, you know, they say, did cowboys sing? Yeah, they sung, you know. Not necessarily played instruments because you couldn't, it wasn't a very, you know, a guitar especially, you know, you didn't see, but maybe a banjo or a fiddle or something like that. But that was the folk music of the working cowboy, you know. And a lot of those songs have been saved. They're still around. I still do them, you know, so they've been saved since the 19th century. And in Western, that was the Hollywood cowboy. They came along, Gene Autry, Roy Rogers, Rex Allen. I made a record with Rex Allen.
Really?
Uh-huh. He was the last singing cowboy in the movies. And I got a chance to record with him, and we made a record together called A Pair to Draw To. And he was just wonderful. I mean, I just loved him, you know. He was just one of those guys. He was a real cowboy. I mean, he'd rodeo some and everything. He had a ranch, and in fact, license plates on his car were called Cowman. But those guys there, I mean, you can never relive that. I mean, we are the ones that are trying to pass it on to another generation, the young people. And there are some. And then there's some that just got no interest whatsoever. They're caught up in the, you know, Star Wars and, you know, I mean, it's just another way of doing that. You know, I mean, they just have a whole other culture. But every once in a while, you find some little kid, 9 years old, come up there and recite poetry. You go, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
Where did you find that, you know? I mean, you know, a little, you know, kid in the suburbs, you know, or in a city, you know, they just focused in on something and they really like it, you know? I mean, genuinely like it. They're not forced to do
right,
it, you know?
Right.
Like, it's pretty amazing thing, you know, but after being in the, I don't know, 55 years of doing this, I've always done it. I would be considered a folk singer back in the days of when Elko like first started, and that's pretty much what I was, you know, like Ramblin' Jack Elliott and people like that, you know. We'd always sung folk music, you know, but cowboy songs were a large part of the repertoire of folk singers. They weren't just singer-songwriters per se.
Mm-hmm. From this valley they say you are going. I will miss your bright eyes and sweet smile, for they say you are taking the sunshine that has brightened my life for a while. Come and sit by my side if you love me. Do not hasten to bid me adieu. Just remember the Red River Valley and the cowboy who loves you so true. I've been waiting a long time, my darling, for the sweet words you never would say. Now all of my fond hopes have vanished, for they say you are going away. Do you think of the valley you're leaving? And how lonely and dreary it will be. Do you think of the heart you are breaking and the pain you are causing to me?
So tell me a little bit about your process as a songwriter. How does a song come to be born?
Well, I don't consider myself a songwriter, as such. But I do write songs. We were known, people that did what I do and did, people like that, we were called songsters. That's an old term, an old, 19th century term. And what a songster is that he prided himself in his repertoire and what he knew, not necessarily what he wrote. Mm-hmm. Even though he may wake up one day and get an idea and write a song. That's how I do it. I mean, I might go a year or two and not have an idea for nothing, just my mind has gone blank, But every once in a while you get a little brainstorm or something, and you say, oh, wow, that's make a good song, But basically, I wasn't a songwriter, but an interpreter. And going back to the old days, they were called songsters. And we were called cowboy songsters.
Well, and you have this wonderful reputation of being a real catalog of music, a real musicologist and a historian of music. How do songs come to you then? I'm sure there's a million avenues that you find material or have found material in your life.
Where do you find material in... you still do the same process like they did in the old days. They took old world ballads and rewrote them a little bit and made another song. Mm-hmm. And so you could possibly, unless it was something that was well known, you could find a fragment of a song. You'd find the fragment of a song and you could write it down and add to it. And that was the folk process, because you kept that little verse there alive, and Lord knows where it came from, but it came from someplace. Mm-hmm. And so you write that down, and you add to it. And so maybe somebody else will come along and add to it, But that's also the folk process, of that. But a singer-songwriter basically or generally doesn't do anything but write songs and perform songs of their own material. Mm-hmm. They don't do any other thing. I mean, that's pretty much it, But I found it that wasn't my thing. I mean, I wasn't really a very prolific writer or anything like that, but I knew a lot of songs, and I just was so, I used to look at those old song books and stuff, we had as a kid, and things like that, and I'd pick out song books, and some of them be Western ones, even, like Gene Autry's Song Folio or something like that, or, Big Book of Cowboy Songs or something, and I'd go through those. I mean, I just cherished them, I mean, I've You know, I'm learning stuff out of, you know, and putting up, making up tunes, you know, and all that kind of stuff, you know, as I progressed as a guitar player, you know. And but that's pretty much what it was done, and even in the we're still throwbacks to that 19th century, you know. And the cowboy music really came along about 1868 would be, because, you know, after the war of Southern independence, it was, you know, that's when the cowboy era came in. And all them cattle were down in the southern part of Texas when the war was over. When they went off to war, all was left was old men, old women, and children. And nobody managed the ranch in the 1850s. Nobody managed anything there. So when they left and they came back 4 years later or whatever it was, and the cattle were scattered, hundreds of thousands of them, you know, all over South Texas, you know. So then they had the roundups, you know, and those songs came out of that. That when they rounded up those cattle and sent them to a northern market, which the North was devastated. I mean, the South was devastated economically, but not physically. You know, the South was, you know, but like in the North, of course, they were the victors, you know, as they say,
right.
You know, but there's a lot to be said about that, and you know, because they really got it all wrong. And anyway, those songs were born in that time period as those big trail drives started, and they started singing songs about their experiences on the trail. I mean, that was, you know, and lo and behold, they're still with us today. You know, I mean, I still sing them. I, you know, I got 100 of them in my head, you know.
I mean, that's fascinating. I giving it some historical context is really great and really interesting.
Oh, yeah, I've always been a history buff. You know, I mean, I always loved history.
Yeah.
You know, I was fascinated by it. And one of the reasons for that, not to get off the subject, but one of the reasons I look back on that was that I wasn't real, you know, when I had history class, I liked it, you know. The rest of it, I was looking out the window, you know, and waiting for school to let out, you know, so I'd go back doing what I was doing, you know, and so I was not least interested, you know. I mean, all these things, you know, what's a pronoun and all this stuff. I mean, you know, I don't know why all that crap. I don't want to know, you know, but you'd learned enough to get by, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was, is that our history teacher, and I'll never forget him, Mr. Ramacordi, he was a football coach, but he was a wonderful teacher. I mean, because he told stories. What do you expect of kids? You can't just say a bunch of boring facts, you know, and they go to sleep. And then they call it attention disorder because they're looking out the window, but it's really not, it's daydreaming. Like, when am I getting out of here? You know, I'm not interested, you know? I mean, they don't make it interesting. But I remember I'm talking about a little kid that had never left me with all that history. That's what really spawned me, why I know all this history today, is because of him.
No, so I'm totally the same way, story. I studied art history, and it's again, a beautiful frame to study history.
Yeah.
You know, looking at it from that perspective, and it is totally about story and narrative and the people, and it's such a hook. But, you know, again, going down this rabbit hole, I think it is utterly amazing and completely heartwarming that you remember this teacher's name. You know, this person made such an impact on you.
Exactly.
That you carry them in your heart.
Yeah.
The power of a teacher to take a kid who's daydreaming and pull them back in. It's incredible. And
we all love stories, remember? I mean, your mother would read to you, your dad would read to you, you know, when you're little, you know?
Sure. And
that's how he was.
Continues.
Yeah.
But it's you know, these teachers just open up these worlds that we never knew existed, and it changes the way we see ourselves.
Right.
And it's such an incredible, incredible thing.
It really is. And you don't know that until you're an adult. Nope. You know, looking back and say, wow, that was really good, you know.
When shadows creep across the hills and purple streaks the sky, when cattle bunch up closer for the night.
Speaking of your story, you've spent your life performing, traveling as a musician. Have you ever found in your career times when performing did not light you up, where it didn't, it felt like a slog, it felt like a job?
Oh, when I was performing?
Yeah.
Well, I have occasionally, you know, maybe when you're overtired or something, you know, from, you know, when you're traveling, you're working 150 days a year, you know. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you might get tired out, but of course we were a lot younger. But no, I mean, as far as any, I have no regrets. I mean, I have been blessed. I am very thankful for what I do, you know, and that I could do what I wanted to do and not have to sell out to the establishment up there in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And because I grew up in the days when country music was, you could tell one singer from the other, you know, and now you can't, you know. And I mean, it's not something that you dislike the music. It's not that. It's, there's no substance. And it's all the same thing. I mean, the tempos are the same, you know. And there's,
we were having this exact conversation this morning, and I couldn't have put it as articulately as you just did, because I don't think I had the right language around it. But we were trying to get that sense of why we liked this genre and not country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what you're talking about, that there really
isn't
distinction.
Because all of a sudden they became, nobody identifies with them except their immediate fans. And not to say they don't have tens of thousands of fans. They do, you know, because the big conglomerate has been pushing it down their throat. You know, I mean, that's pretty much what they do, you know. I mean, you get big business, you know, as they say.
Yeah.
You know, it pretty much the creative thing goes away, you know.
Right.
Because you're doing it like a, mechanical. You know, you're not doing it because you like it, you know. I mean, but a perfect example of that is Garth Brooks, you know?
Do you know
about him?
Yeah.
Well, I never cared much for his music, but I'll tell you what, he knew his music. Because he was the one that came to, like, Stephanie Davis and, you know, found that talent. And they told him, you record those songs, you're going to ruin your career, you know, like that. He said, well, I'm going to do them anyway. And he did. He had total control over his career. But Waddy Mitchell and I were given out the awards at the country music thing, but it was at Universal City one year. And we presented Garth with his Video of the Year, you know, award. And this is back when I was still smoking. I used to smoke a pipe, you know. So Waddy and I are backstage out in the loading dock, and we're, you know, he lights up a cigarette, and, you know, he says, I hope we didn't screw that up too bad, you know, with Garth, you know. So anyway, we go backstage, we're just talking to each other like that. Well, here come Garth. He said, thank you guys. He says, I couldn't have found a better couple of guys to give me that award than you guys. He said, don't think I don't know what you're doing. He says, I do, and I love it, you know. And he did. And one time on those awards, what he did, I mean, he really backed it up because of the fact that, you know, the funny thing was is that he did the exact same thing on the awards banquet. You know, he come out there, they thought he was going to sing one of his hits. And he didn't. He did the Knight Rider's Lament around a fake campfire. And I mean, people in the record company, they probably going nuts. They probably committed suicide, you know? I mean, they said, what's Garth doing? You know, ruin his career, you know? But it was so funny. But that's what I do hand him, you know. I wasn't a real fan of his music. I mean, I'm that, but that's fine.
But
you
it's an action of integrity, right?
Absolutely.
And that you can respect.
Right.
You know, I don't love the work of every artist, but I obviously there are artists that you really admire their process or their integrity or the way that they've chosen to live in their art. And the process is just as important as the product. Sometimes it's more important.
Really?
You know, it's,
and they never seem to get that, you know, because they say the record industry really hurt a lot, too. I mean, of course, they made big mega dollars, you know, and I mean, in that sense. But a lot of the music went away. The ballads and the old music and stuff like that kind of went away because all they thought about was the dollar, you know. And So a lot of talent went by the wayside because they didn't want, that didn't fit in with their idea of country music as per se. And but when I was growing up, when you listen to country music, I could tell you in two notes who everybody was. Easy, because they all sounded different. I can tell you who Marty Robbins was, who Merle Haggard was. You know, I mean, all these people in the country field, you know, which I played a lot of country music then. I mean, I played bands and stuff like that. I played Western Swing, had a big band. And then I went, made full circle, and I went back to being a songster, you know. But I still did the material, you know, even with a band, you know. But that's when I went back to the, you know, when Elko happened. You see, I was playing, you know, when I didn't play with a band, I was playing, you know, in coffee houses and things like that, that folk singers do, you know. And so when that came along, that changed the world.
Yes, and I wonder too about the way that we're teaching our young people about how to have a life in art, and my concern is that we mark success through money instead of marking success through process again.
Exactly.
I want our children to be drawing because it gives them pleasure, not in the hopes that they're going to be the next, you know, famous
exactly.
artist.
Yeah.
There's just this, it feels like there's this constant end game towards fame or money.
Yeah.
And it's an unrealistic goal, first of all. But it's part of why I wanted to have this show, that you can actually have a life in art that's fulfilling and not
exactly.
be famous and not be wealthy.
Regardless of what you're doing, right?
And maybe have another job that pays the bills. But this is where we feed our soul, not our pocketbook.
Right. Exactly. That's what we've stood for all the whole time, you know, was that. And because we, you know, it was about the art form, you know. It wasn't about the monetary part of it, you know. And so... you know, that's where you've got to go to find the heart in it, you know what I mean? And and all the things that, why has Elko lasted for 32 years?
It's amazing.
You know?
But it is. It's
usually these festivals go away and, you know, at a decade at most, you know. Either somebody doesn't want to ramrod it, you know,
yeah.
anymore, or someone passes away, or they just don't care anymore.
Right.
You know, but to go on that long, this one right here, 22 years I've been coming to this thing.
Amazing.
I woke up one day and I was 75 years old. I said, how did that happen? You know? But they don't judge you by, you know, by what you look like. You know, thank goodness, they judge you by what you're playing, you know? And I'll tell you another thing with that poetry and the music gathering, the audience is very savvy. The audience didn't just fall off the turnip truck, you know. I mean, they're. It's amazing how, you know, observant they are, mm-hmm. and all the. Oh man, it's just a wonderful thing. I couldn't believe it when we first came to Elko, and that's what spawned that. But we folk singers have always done what we do, and nothing's changed there. But there was a venue for it now, you know. Whereas you were just a folk singer, you know, and that was fine. You know, made a few dollars, you know, and kind of struggled along. But when that changed everything.
I rode across the valley range I hadn't seen for years. The trail was all so spoilt and strange, it nearly fetched the tears. I had to let 10 fences down, the fussy lanes ran wrong. And each new line would make me frown and hum this morning song. Hear 'em stretching of the wire. The urban brand is on the land. I reckon I'll retire. And while progress toots her greedy horn and makes her motor buzz, I thanks the Lord I wasn't born no later than I was.
Yeah, oh, hey, you know, if you like what you do, I mean, you don't have to work. You know, I'm working, I'm doing what I like, you know. Well, you know, they say, well, when are you going to retire? I says, well, I don't know, when I fall over dead, I guess, you know. I mean, if I'm not an embarrassment to people, I mean, you know, I'll continue on, you know.
West and room to go and come. I loved my fellow man the best when he was scattered some.
There it is. Zest. I had no idea what to expect in conversation with a man of such integrity, reputation, and legacy. Would he be serious, stoic, perhaps withdrawn, or maybe just powerful and all-knowing? The man I met was warm and friendly. The boy who dreamed of cowboying with wide-eyed wonderment is still there and in spades. Mr. Edwards seems delighted to share and listen, keen to make connections, and genuinely engaged in the world around him. He knows his mind and heart and speaks his truth with ease. This week, Bob Dylan was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature, and there's a part of me that wants to celebrate this as a victory for all the songwriters who never got their proper due. The song is a harmonious dance between music and language, and so perhaps we can give a bit more credit to these songwriters as true wordsmiths. Perhaps it's time to listen with new ears, not only to the tune, but the words and the way they're offered. What a huge talent Don Edwards is, and what a gift he shared with his audience. He's like a walking, talking catalog of cowboy music. He knows so much and shares so much. But it's so clear that not only does Mr. Edwards have volumes of information to teach us, he's a student too. He wants to know more and share more and keep going. I'm grateful Mr. Edwards reminds me to look back and give thanks to the teachers that shaped me, but also to look forward at the places I choose to focus my studies today. How can I be a better student of community, family, spirit, art, and hope? Can I remember that I don't know it all and keep that zest for knowledge alive always? I'm thankful Mr. Edwards reminds me that I can keep investigating and learning along the way. And of course, I'm thankful to you for listening. To learn more about our show, Cowboy Poets and Musicians, and to see pictures of my travels, visit thecowboypages.com.